Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to have an extraordinarily interesting show today. We have Peter Herman from the Baltimore Sun. Peter has been around the world in the Jerusalem Bureau for the Baltimore Sun. He's been a former police reporter, and now he writes a very interesting column almost on a daily basis for the Baltimore Sun, putting this whole crime issue, the issue of crime and justice, in perspective. Also at our microphones, another veteran, 20 years of newspaper reporting, Robert Pierre with the Washington Post. And again, what Robert and Peter do, I think, ladies and gentlemen, is to try to take their work for their respective newspapers, and they're trying to put this issue of crime and justice into context. And I think that that's interesting because I think it's a dying art that's happening throughout the country, that we're getting less and less good, solid reporting and good, solid information about what's happening on crime and the criminal justice issue. And to discuss this, what we have on, again, Peter Herman and Robert Pierre. And Peter and Robert, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
Okay. Guys, what about that? I mean, both of you do an interesting column. Both of you do what I think is a really unique. Peter, you write that almost a daily blog in terms of trying to put the crime problem in the city of Baltimore within context, where, you know, most newspapers in this country are giving it 4 or 5 column inches in terms of a particular crime or a crime problem, and they're putting it on the fourth page of the local section. It seems as if newspapers have almost given up, and here you are doing almost a daily analysis of crime within a particular neighborhood in Baltimore City and what's happening. Do you think what you're doing is unique and different?
I don't know if it's unique and different. I think papers have done a terrific job over the years of certainly covering breaking crime, and we've always been criticized, I think, for probably covering crime too much, putting it on the front page too much. It's easy to sensationalize some of the stories that go on in any big city on a daily basis. And certainly, I think if you look at some of the crime that both the daily breaking crime that both the Washington Post and the Baltimore Sun and other papers do, it's not even a fraction of the crime that's occurring in some
of
these cities.
I understand that, but crime and criminal justice issues are huge issues in the life of any city. I mean, in some cases, they define a city, and Baltimore is certainly one of the cities where the crime issue has defined. So if you have an issue that's defining a metropolitan area, does it do with justice to put stories on the inside of the paper?
I think it does and it doesn't. I think it all depends on the story, and I think we're all tired of writing and probably seeing some of the same stories that we've seen over the last 10, 20 years, and you start to wonder how it's came to be this way, how it can be fixed. And while we've done a good job of sort of putting the daily breaking stories on, you know, in the paper, one of the challenges is to figure out new ways of covering some of the same old issues, trying to answer why they're the same old issues. I mean, they shouldn't be the same issues. We should have figured this out 20, 30 years ago. We haven't, obviously. It is, I think, born of my frustration of being a crime reporter and every 6 months writing these crime statistic stories, which you quote the same people and come up, you know, crime is up. It's because more people are reporting it. Crime is down. The police have done a good job. You go out and you call a few experts and you write a story. We've all done them. We're all sick of them.
150,000 times. Right. And the readers are probably tired of listening to them. But
right. And I think this approach is trying to find a unique, different way of covering some of the issues that we've always done and other ones that we've missed. Going into neighborhoods we haven't gone into, giving voices to people who sometimes maybe get a sentence or two at a community meeting or at a crime scene. I think residents all over, certainly Baltimore, the only time they ever see a Baltimore Sun reporter is on the other side of a crime scene tape.
Right. And on the other side of the roped off area.
And there are other, and they have issues that crime gets into everything. I was talking to a minister the other day in one of the communities in Baltimore, and yes, he wants the kids off the street. He wants loitering to stop. He wants police to be actually more proactive and more aggressive in his neighborhood. But he also wants more programs, and he's talking about, trying to help people get off drugs and get of reinstilling values. He said, "I'm tired of going out and telling the same kids every day to move their bicycle off my church parking lot."
Right.
And eventually, now I've got kids selling drugs on the corner, and he was talking about values. And you don't see that in newspapers too much. You don't see people like that get an extended voice through the blog, through the column. I can do that, and that's something that's kind of fun.
And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy reading the column, because it puts it in context. We're going to go over to Robert Pierre from the Washington Post, but also for those people who want to get in touch with Peter Herman, it's Peter Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N-N, Peter, at Baltsun, B-A-L-T-S-U-N.com. Peter also has a blog at baltimoresun.com/crime. Okay? Blog at the blog at baltimoresun.com/crime. Robert Pierre, you've done some really interesting analytical pieces trying to give the citizens of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area a taste for the reality of what we within the criminal justice system have to do. How were you allowed to do that? Why is that? Why it's not the norm. I don't believe it's the norm in most newspapers throughout the country. I think what you do is unique.
Well, it is in some ways. I mean, there are people who certainly do, like what Peter's doing in Baltimore, but it has to be. A lot of this is driven by what the individual reporter is interested in. I mean, and having been there at the Post long enough since 1993 to be able to sort of carve out something that you're interested in. Because one of the things that we've always done is we try to go and explain, like, someone get killed, and we will still put this on and say someone was killed at a barbershop because they were fighting over 50 cents.
Right.
You know, and it seems like a very ridiculous crime. And so we say, you know, wow, that's really pretty stupid. Here is how. Why would people do something like this?
Right.
And then you go back and you when you talk to some of the kids, either at the front end, mm-hmm. you know, or at the crime scene, but or you go after the kid's been in prison, mm-hmm. you know, for a while or whatever, or when they're getting out, and you start to learn what happened behind some of these stories. A lot of what I have learned, either going through hearings through CSOSA, the organization that you're involved with, or the parole commissioner, people. A lot of people who commit crime come out of the abuse and neglect system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and so we want to make it this crime, this block, this whatever it was. And a lot of times it's just you can't separate it, because the value story, we want to write a separate value story about a church. We want to write a separate crime story about that neighborhood. But actually they're all intertwined. And what you have to do is crime reporters can't just cover crime. They've got to cover a community.
They've got to cover the reality of what happens to individuals throughout their lives.
Yes.
And I think that's the sort of reporting you bring through the Washington Post. But again, go back, and it's the last time I'll ask it. The perception I have is that newspapers and a lot of media sources, radio, television, I don't want to leave the electronic media out of this. It's almost as if they've said, okay, we just don't care anymore.
In terms
of the overall crime problem, it's like, we don't care anymore. How many times can you hear about Johnny Doe sticking up Billy over a perceived insult and killing somebody? I mean, I've heard that. They're saying this to themselves. I've heard this, you know, for decades. You know, you don't even have to tell me the story. I can write the story for myself in my mind's eye. I'm simply going to skip by it. I mean, have we gotten to that point?
Yeah, I think there is certainly a level of disconnectedness with certain crimes, because we say we already know that story. And what I think that you have to do is say, do you know the story? Because really, it's difficult work. As the newspapers and the television station and all the others have less, you know, people to go out into communities, what you end up, to do real crime reporting, you actually got to do some work. It's not just going interview. You can't show up the day the crime occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we end up with the same story, because we make it the same story because we report it exactly the same way. We don't go inside the numbers. We wrote a story at the Post the other day that really it was a poorly done story, because we talked about juvenile crime and about how it was increasing. But the numbers don't say that. The numbers say exactly the opposite, that serious mm-hmm. juvenile crime is in fact down. Now, that doesn't mean that the person wasn't upset about it, because if it happens to you, then you're very upset about that crime. But we wrote, oh, juvenile crime is rising, because that story gets a headline.
Right.
But you got to go deeper, and we actually sometimes do that, but not on a regular enough basis.
Peter Herman, you know, this larger issue of digging in deep. this larger issue of providing context, this larger issue that there's a story behind the story behind the story. And if you're going to understand what's happening with the police department, if you're going to understand what's happening with corrections, if you're going to understand what's happening with drugs, what's happening with crime, if we find that important, then people need context. People need to understand what it is they're reading. So it's got to be more than 3 or 4 column inches. It has to be an examination of how the system really works.
Well, crime is an extraordinarily complex subject. There isn't just a crime and then it happens. Once you start researching even very casually through the criminal justice system on a suspect or on a witness or on anyone that gets caught up in a daily story, it's volumes. And it's trips to the courthouse, and then it's interviews, and then it's trying to figure out from there what happened. You could go on forever on any story, and every single homicide, every single shooting. There's a huge story behind, probably, and a very interesting, compelling tale behind each one, and failures of lifestyle, of government, of just you name it.
But isn't the average citizen saying to themselves, "Am I safer? Am I better off? Am I safer?
Sure.
Is my neighborhood safer? Are my children's? Is that what they need to understand?"
Yes, and we do a tremendous disservice by doing very quick stories on crime stats and neighborhoods without delving into the impact of what's actually happening there. Because to answer that is more than just a crime statistic. It is context. It is a history of the neighborhood. It is who lives there now and who doesn't live there now. I once did a story on crime stats, and I interviewed someone who thought things had gotten much better from one year to the next, because in 1990 he was mugged and shot, and in 1991 he just got mugged but he didn't get shot, and he thought that was such a tremendous improvement in the system, he was willing to say that government is doing better. And I was astounded by that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's perception is everything. I mean, perception of crime is everything.
People want to know about their safety. People want to know that government is having an effect or not having an effect. I mean, that's the interesting part of this whole dichotomy. People read the paper or they listen to the evening news, and I don't think they get that sense that, A, they're safer, B, that government is doing what it should be doing, or C, what should government do to follow up?
Well, I mean, the crime blog in Baltimore, as I imagine it would be in D.C., would be, if we ran it all, would be a blotter of everything that happened, would be a book. And you still get calls from readers who say, a police car drove by my neighborhood. I saw the police helicopter up. What was it doing there? Well,
right.
I don't know what it was doing there.
Right.
And frankly, to find out would be almost impossible.
Yes, I agree.
But people see or hear sirens in their neighborhood. They think it's unsafe for that night. We rationalize crime in a way that's unbelievable. Federal Hill, which is a posh neighborhood in the city, mm-hmm. Near the Inner Harbor, had mm-hmm. two murders on back-to-back nights.
Mm-hmm.
Belvedere just had three shootings.
Which is a big hotel in Baltimore City, prestigious hotel.
But when you listen to the people in Federal Hill, it was after 3 in the morning, and I'm not out at 3 in the morning,
right.
So it's okay. Well, the victims were not from my community, so I guess
right.
I'm not a target, so it's okay.
Right.
Well, one was he wasn't shot here. The body was dumped there. So that's okay. You know, I'm thinking, are we that? We look, it's not on our street, so it's okay. Well, it's not on our doorstep, it's okay.
Well,
and I'm thinking, it's still.
If you take a look at national research, people constantly rate other neighborhoods as dangerous, but give very high ratings to their own neighborhoods in terms of safety. I guess it's a matter of what you know versus what you don't know
right.
over the hill.
It's everything from what people report to how they report it, to how the police report it, to how they react in different neighborhoods. To say one neighborhood is safer than another, is a very difficult task.
We've just blown by 15 minutes rapid fire. I can't believe how fast this program is going. I want to reintroduce our guest, Peter Herman. Peter Herman, 20-year reporter with the Baltimore Sun. Peter Herman at baltsun.com. His blog is baltimoresun.com/crime. And Robert Pierre, it is Pierre, P-I-E-R-R-E-R, at washpost.com. And I didn't do our commercial. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We do listen and respond and read read every comment that you provide. We are way above 1,200,000 hits for the program since the program's inception about a year and a half ago. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate the input that you have, and please continue. And so back to the program. Robert Pierre, what are your thoughts in terms of what Peter just said? Is it that confusing? Is it almost impossible to take this immensely complex issue and explain it in such a way that the average citizen understands their role in this?
Well, I think it just requires some investment of time, and a lot of places that investment is simply isn't there anymore, or as often as it should be, to do in-depth work. I was at a forum this morning sponsored by the Brookings Institute. It was about juvenile justice. And, you know, a lot of people, if you go, no matter what neighborhood you go to, people say juvenile crime is up. It's just up, you know, and people are afraid of it.
These kids are getting out of hand.
Now, we've heard that forever. Now, they gave a statistic. One of the professors gave us this the statistic. He said in 2007, there were 1.6 million youth involved with in the criminal justice system, in the juvenile justice system all around the country. And he asked a question, how many of them were murders? And how many would you guess?
Oh, the overwhelming majority are going to be minor crimes.
Overwhelming majority. 1,000 out of 1.6 million were murders.
Right.
Were homicides of any sort. And so, but that would not be, you know, but the super predator idea is still very pervasive.
Oh, guess the, here, this statistic, the vast majority of individuals who come into contact with the juvenile justice system, what happens to them?
I don't know.
They drop out.
Oh, they just go away, yeah.
They just go away.
Yeah.
So the overwhelming majority of kids, people under the age of 18, who come into contact with the criminal justice system don't stay in contact with the criminal justice system. So, I mean, they're interesting stats that the average person would not tend to believe.
Now, if you're one of the people who got knocked over your head by a juvenile, then that doesn't mean anything to you because you're still saying, hey, but that on my block, like what Peter was saying, it's out of control because...
I understand it. I understand that if it happens to you, if it happens to a loved one, if it happens to your community, if it happens to your larger community as defined by, fill in the blank, East Baltimore, east of the river, black, white, Hispanic. I mean, there's all different ways of defining crime, and there's all different ways of defining the problem. But you know, it just, you know, the bottom line question I have throughout this entire program is that because of the dwindling resources that most folks in the media seem to be giving to this issue, have we given up truly doing a good job of defining what the problem is and what government should be doing about it? Peter.
No, I think the problem shifts from year to year. I mean, when I was covering crime, there was a lot of issues in terms of we didn't have gangs and we didn't have witness intimidation wasn't a big issue. I came back to the city and all of a sudden witness intimidation is at the forefront.
Right.
And, you know, I think we've covered it rather well. Have we done huge, big in-depth investigations on it? No, but through, you know, it's not just one story. I mean, it's very easy to show up the crime scene, point a camera, talk to a bunch of cops, talk to some witnesses and throw up a story. That's easy. We can both do that in our sleep, I think, by now. The more complicated issue is always going to be coming back on it. And it's more than just police. And it's more than just a police reporter doing it. It involves the various social institutions. It involves parole and probation. It can involve, foster care.
Does the criminal justice system have the capacity to deal with this?
Or
is this
a much
larger societal issue?
It's a larger societal issue. The cops get a lot of the questions, but also a lot of things that go wrong start with a police story. They start with a dead child in a room.
Right.
And a police reporter with a notebook and a cameraman and a TV crew outside.
Right.
And then what happens to that foster? What happened to that child?
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's a issue of foster care. The two children who were killed and found in the freezer in Southern Maryland. It's a issue over adoption agencies in D.C. now. And that's not a police story. But it starts as a police story.
It starts
as
a
larger societal
story.
Issue, and it gets at a whole bunch of other things. A lot of these stories start that way.
We have significant reductions of crime in Baltimore City. We have significant reductions of crime in Washington, D.C. What does that mean to the average person when you report on the fact that homicides are down in Baltimore City and that homicides are down in Washington, D.C.? What does that mean? When you say that, when you report on that, what is that person picking up a copy of the Washington Post and sitting there in Northeast Washington? What does that mean to that person? I'm safer?
Well, it may not mean anything to that person, but we have two different audiences because I live in Washington, D.C. as well, and I live in Anacostia, a neighborhood that people think is very – and I know it's a high crime area because I can look at some of the statistics and I know that a lot of the offenders come from, you know, that come through the parole probation system. They live in or around where I live. Mm-hmm. But one audience is the person who was directly impacted, but the other, I'm also a taxpayer in Washington, and I'm also talking to the people who made the decision about how to put money on the streets. And if homicides are down, then maybe we should spend the money somewhere. Maybe you should spend the money somewhere else. Maybe you should have what people are talking about, more people walking the beat or something, mm-hmm. Something like that. And what police will tell you anyway is that there's no amount of police that can stop a homicide if someone is intent on killing someone.
Oh, that's true. I mean, if you have two individuals, not in terms of somebody in town killing someone, if you have two kids and they're sitting on the street corner and one insults the other person's girlfriend and the other person takes out a gun and shoots them, I'm you know, that's a terribly, terribly, terribly difficult thing to intervene in, especially if they don't have a violent history beforehand. But so many interpersonal squabbles end up in the homicides in both cities. I guess what I'm trying to do is, what do we say to citizens? What is the bottom line beyond, you know, do we just simply objectively report the news and be done with it and go home and have our martinis? Or is there a larger issue here in terms of what people should believe in the Baltimore Sun and Washington Post about from the crime problem? I don't think they necessarily should believe me because I represent government and I think I'm as honest as the next public affairs person. But I think the real story has to come from the media.
It depends. Robert's exactly right. Depends on your audience. I have someone visiting from outside the city. They call me up to say I'm not coming because I see homicides are up and the city's unsafe. Well, maybe not. They see homicides are down, they're going to pay a visit. Well, not necessarily where I live, mm-hmm. or where I go. If you are intent on purchasing drugs in East or West Baltimore, your chances of being a victim, being robbed, being shot, being killed are much higher than if you visit the Inner Harbor.
Right.
So if that's what I'm going to be doing that day, I might want to look at those stats a little bit more closely.
If you play the game, the odds are much higher that you could be victimized.
I always thought, you know, we never have a postman killed in East or West Baltimore. People doing legitimate work, even in some of the worst areas of the city, don't often get shot. Johns Hopkins Hospital, now it has a lot of security, but it's in the heart of one of the worst, most dangerous sections of the city.
Right. If you have a legitimate reason for being there, you're not bothered.
You know, we had, I think, an attack on a nurse back in the early 90s, and I think that's the last thing that I can remember.
Right.
But interesting what you say. When I was covering crime as a reporter, homicides and shootings were skyrocketing. They were well above 300 every year. Mm-hmm. And I used to write stories, and headlines would always say, you know, the murder rate is up. And every time I get a call from the police commissioner that everything else is down. The assaults are down, the burglaries are down, and you never write about that. Mm-hmm. The thing driving the numbers up were the shootings and the homicides. I just looked at the last bit of stats that we had. Homicides down 30%, mm-hmm. shootings down 35%. Mm-hmm. What's up? Burglaries, larceny from autos, car break-ins, and assaults. Crime is actually up in Baltimore 1%, but you wouldn't know it because now city government is all about the homicides are down, so everybody is safer.
Right.
And the overwhelming cars are getting broken into, more houses are getting burglarized.
But I don't know
what it all means.
That's the interesting thing. If you take a look at national statistics, 15% of crime across the board is violent. The overwhelming majority of what we call crime is property crime.
Homicides are such a low number, low percentage of any crime in any city that it's just not a good joke.
I remember talking to a manager of a television station who moved in town and moved into Charles Village in Baltimore City, and he was determined to be part of the city fabric, and after the third larceny from his garage in terms of a bicycle, he simply said, that's it. So it is an individual...
That's the type of crime that I find in communities, no matter what community you're in. can be a community where four people have been shot around the corner. The complaint is that my car was broken into.
My car was broken into. They're too loud on the corner. There's too much graffiti. There's too much trash. There are too many signs of disorder, and that makes me uncomfortable.
In every community meeting, whether it's in West Baltimore or in, you know, some other neighborhood, it's, again, kids are out of control. They're on the corners.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, you know, and that's absolutely right. And for that perspective, and that is what residents, police will tell you this, ma'am, I can't arrest the kid for standing on the corner. And sometimes they can go shake him down and say, I'm going to get him off the corner. Mm-hmm. But he says, I don't have a reason to arrest him because they haven't done anything. But that is exactly the kind of thing that makes people nervous about mm-hmm. sitting on their own porch. Mm-hmm. And so that in their own mind constitutes crime.
Right. And that is their definition of crime.
Right.
It is not the homicides. It's not the rapes. It's what's happening on your stoop. It's what's happening on your street. It's what's happening within your immediate community. If you've got a bunch of guys who you perceive as thugs ruling that street, they may not be doing anything at all, but the perception of danger is enough to make you feel very uncomfortable. It's not the homicides. It's not the rapes. It's what that person envisions, what that person lives with on a regular day-in, day-out basis.
And it's not just crime. Sometimes it's something even more subtle than that. The Baltimore police have a lot of cameras, as I think D.C. does, and there are neighborhoods that want the camera. They want surveillance cameras up. They want to see the blinking blue light. Other neighborhoods don't want it. And fairly wealthy neighborhood where they were having problems with car break-ins.
And wouldn't want that blue light with a 10-foot pole.
And they didn't want the blue light. It just said that we are now a crime neighborhood,
right.
And they didn't want it, and they railed against it.
Right.
When we had two people shot in Federal Hill, they immediately flooded the area with police, which is the natural reaction anywhere. Immediately, the same district got calls from its poorer neighborhoods, mm-hmm. Westport and Brooklyn and Cherry Hill, wondering, well, now, boy, we have homicides all the time and shootings all the time. Now you got two dead people in the rich area, and we're going to lose all of our police.
So what this says to me is that there's no way that any newspaper, there's no way that any media entity can summarize the totality of what we refer to as crime. It's just too big, too massive. But what they do need is more than five column inches, three pages in on the local section. They do need somebody to place in this in the context for them so they can have a better understanding, so they can make their own decisions as to how they're going to live their lives. Am I in the ballpark?
Yeah, but keep in mind, newspapers aren't books, and we don't write PhD dissertations, all of which have been tried on this same subject, and none of them ever get to where we all want to be. We tend to write short stories, and I think you have to look at both over time, what they've done with some of the small stories. The small stories tend to put something on the mark. Robert notices them, goes out, does something bigger on them. It builds on itself. You have to look at the coverage over time, and hopefully over time we're able to come to some conclusions.
But newspapers and media sources, Robert, do need to dedicate themselves to helping citizens understand the reality of what, for many cities in this country, is their driving concern.
But, you know, I would say this. As we talk about what newspapers should and shouldn't do and what other newspapers, I'm not sure we do it on a lot of things. Crime is one example. Newspapers aren't going to forget crime because it's easy to cover, and it is something that's immediate. Some people don't want my analysis of it. They don't want Peter's analysis of it. They just want to know how many break-ins were there on my block. And mm-hmm. so I think that you're always going to get some of that from newspapers, and some people only want to know what was the fire truck doing on my block last
right.
night, if there was something.
Or what was the helicopter
exactly
doing.
Whatever it was. And so for them, that's going to be enough. But I think that if newspapers are going to fulfill some of his other duties that I think that we have an obligation to, which is talking back a little bit to the public policy folks, then that's where I think we have to put a little bit effort into getting on inside the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Peter, you've got the final word.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think there are a ton of things we don't cover and don't cover very well or don't cover at all, and it's an immensely complex issue. It's also that in schools are one of the issues that people want to know most about. But again, he's exactly right. The overwhelming number of calls I get are, why is a police car in my neighborhood?
Right.
How many houses were broken into last night on my street? That's what they want to.
How does all this affect me? Is right. what you're saying. Fascinating conversation. The 30 minutes went by like absolute wildfire, and I'd love to do this with both of you again. Peter Herman, 20-year reporter with the Baltimore Sun. It's Peter Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N-N, at BaltSun, BALTSUN.com. Peter's blog, and he also puts up a video blog. I find it very interesting, at BaltimoreSun.com/crime. 20-year reporter Robert Pierre for the Washington Post, at Pierre, P-I-E-R-R-E-R, at WashPost, WASHPOST.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Thank you and have a great day.